This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, already getting valuable updates this morning live from Shakerton's in Arlington from the 817. Kevin, it was an 18-wheeler on 30, spilled goods and fuel spilled across all the lanes, closed for morning cleanup. Well, thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
Kevin.
That is unfortunate. I hope, like, nobody got hurt then. I realize that is a massive inconvenience, but I hope everybody's okay then.
Yeah, my kid just, I was talking about gas leak and Mesquite a long time ago. My kid just texted me and said he has a gas leak at his school.
What?
And so I'm trying to get more information before I talk about it too much. But yeah, so I was like, are y'all getting sent home from school today? And you know, that stinks too, because today he wore his KNC Masterpiece shirt to school.
That's
so he
nice.
Was like, I'm repping you guys. So that was awesome.
Well, we hope everybody will come join us at Shakerton's in Arlington, courtesy of Corey Shirt.
They are open now.
Oh, they did
they
open now.
They opened at 10 to make sure that they could accommodate anybody that wanted to pop in early.
And you can play pool.
You can play pool, and you also have the power lunch today. Monday through Friday, you got the power lunch out there, so make sure you come in here for lunch today.
Will you allow people to sit on the couch right behind you if they want?
If they want to, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
I'm okay
nice.
With that. Yeah.
That's very nice of you. All right. You ready? What? It is very nice of you. Are you ready to dive into the Saints? Give me cut number 9, if you will.
Carr rolling.
Hutch Landon sneaking out.
He throws. Touchdown! Held on to by Foster Moreau.
And if you're watching us on the YouTube or the Twitch, it did appear as though Corey was pumping his fist when the Saints scored a touchdown.
Oh, one of our colos popped in.
You know, that's a great excuse, but what it felt like is you were cheering for the Saints right there. So it's time for our next up series, and we dive into scouting the Saints. And so here's what I want to start with. I want to start basic, and then we'll drill deeper.
All right.
Saints defeated the Panthers 47-10. 47 points were the most points scored by any team in the NFL. 37-point margin of victory, biggest of any team in the NFL in week one. Is that like, hey, wow, that's neat? Or do you immediately dismiss that because you're going against what it feels like a consensus bottom two NFL team?
And when you say bottom two NFL team, sometimes I feel like it's not even an NFL team.
Okay.
Like the way, if you watch that game and watch some of the, they were bumbling. They were all over the place. They didn't look organized at all. Looked like that was their first time to ever play together. And so that's where whenever I watch that game, I go, okay, that was a warm up for the New Orleans Saints more than anything else. And I wouldn't expect the Panthers to have much success throughout this season unless they can figure out how to play a cleaner game. But yeah, Kevin, man, they had the Panthers only 58 yards on the ground, 2.9 yards per carry.
Yes.
Those were the two best rushing statistics in the NFL for your defense. So that part of it, and then Bryce Young struggles throughout the day. Yeah, that's going to be one of those where I look at it and I go, the Panthers are bad. New Orleans took advantage of
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. I can understand that. Now, the same question, I guess, kind of holds firm with Derek Carr, which, you know what? I'm further investigating this now.
Okay.
Because I've seen multiple places have said Derek Carr was 19 for 24. But then the Saints' own press release said, no, he was 19 for 23. Are we cooking the books here with this one incomplete pass? Because that's what I need to know.
They're trying to change up his completion percentage just a little bit, like they did with Jordan and all his steals back in the day.
Either way, that's right, hometown bias. Either way, it was impressive. The stats as they were put in the system, Derek Carr, 82.6% of his passes were complete, the sixth highest percentage of his career and the best ever with the Saints. So clearly, he had a standout day. And again, I know you already referenced all the things that happened with the Panthers, but still, it was an impressive performance. You went up against a subpar team and you really beat down on them. So let's talk about some of the reasons why. Offensively, Alvin Kamara, 83 yards and a touchdown. 83 yards rushing and a touchdown. That's great. Here's what I want to focus on. More importantly for me, he caught all five of his targets out of the backfield. Now, that's something that we've talked about in the past is you have issues, not you, just people in general, with the Cowboys' run defense. Part of that sometimes can be the running quarterback, but part of that sometimes can trickle over in terms of these little screen passes out of the backfield and stuff. And so if Alvin Kamara is going to be efficient, that's naturally feels like it's going to be a challenge for the Cowboys defense.
I'm not too concerned about Derek Carr taking off running. So I'll say that's one of the things that's not a big concern for me throughout this game. And therefore, I feel like your linebackers, man, we just saw it. That linebacking group and the rotation that they have, the mix of linebackers that they have, and the speed of Overshown, I feel very comfortable, more comfortable than I've felt in a long time. Plus, Kevin, if you watch I'm not saying that it's fixed, but the Cowboys defensive front did a really...
Oh, you mean fixed as in mended, not yeah, fixed not, yeah, as not, in corrupt.
Yeah, not corrupt. No, it's the Cowboys defensive front did a really good job of holding their ground. Mazi, we talked about Mazi. He did a good job doing his job.
Yeah.
The other guys on that defensive front, that defensive tackle area, they did their job too. I am a little concerned about Marshawn Nealon's calf injury. We'll talk to Mickey about that here in just a little bit, just because that calf injury, if that keeps him out, he's one of your better edge rush defenders. And so if that's a problem for him and he's not out on the field, that's concerning because you're getting lighter and lighter at that position now, and I don't like that so much. But with Alvin Kamara, he's going to get his, but Kevin, the pursuit of the Cowboys linebackers right now is really good. It's the best that I've seen in years. Eric Kendricks is fast. Overshown's fast. Those guys are going to get to Alvin Kamara quickly, limit the amount, because they like to get it to the ball to him in space. They'll limit the amount of yardage he can get after he gets into that space and after he gets the ball in his hands.
So you're telling me I don't have to worry about that aspect
at all? I'm not too concerned about it right now.
All right.
Let's say he breaks off one. I don't think it's going to be much more for the rest of the day.
You know what? I think I would enjoy this as a future segment for the Tolos, the folks on the YouTube and the Twitch. We bring up things that might concern us about an opponent, and then everyone listening debunks why you should not be concerned about that. That'd be awesome. And hopefully by the end of it, you're like, that's it. That's all that's on my list. And you guys have debunked all of them. That would be tremendous. From the 817, Kevin went to the Dallas Card Show with my son this past weekend. Always an excellent decision. Spun one of the wheels out there for $5. Found me a Bobby Bonilla rookie card, and I think it's an error. Sweet. I always think it's fun to go out there with Brandon as well, so wanted to shout them out. Going to go shake them down today. Big supporter of Peace-a-thon. Look, I already told you.
I just feel like there's a different phrase you could use than shakedown, but it does sound intimidating.
Hey,
so
it works. Now, all right. Let's talk. Do you want to talk more about the offense, or do you want to move over to the defense? I know you did talk about how well they did rushing wise. Do you want to stick with the offense then?
Well, I wanted to flip the other side and ask you a question about this, because the Saints rush defense isn't their best quality. The Cowboys rush offense is not their best quality.
Sure.
Whenever that matches up, how do you feel? Because the Cowboys, you feel like their pass defense is pretty good. Their run defense in game one will look pretty good. Their offensive passing is probably their strong suit, and that's how the Cowboys are probably going to live. So whenever you have two things that aren't good match up, do you go, well, let's just scrap that part of the game? Or do you say, hey, we need to work on this week to take advantage of it?
Yeah, and because isn't that going to be your argument, right? Like, you have to try to find a consistency to the run game that, I don't know. One thing I'm really fascinated in this game is the offense was very poor in the second half for the Cowboys. Now, was that a byproduct of Cleveland's got a good defense?
Same thing happened last year, right, with the Giants to open the season.
Yeah.
And the discussion was they didn't have to do anything.
And I think that's a fair point, because like that game was over. At no point did I think the Cowboys in the second half were in any danger of losing that game. But you would have still loved to see that it was like, I don't know, 47-17 or something along those lines. Even Dak admitted it wasn't his best game.
Go hang 100 on the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I would love to see that someday. So I would like to see more offensive efficiency, and that feels like it starts with the run game. I don't know how reasonable that is, because we've talked again and again and again about the quality of the running back's room and what the expectations are, but I do hope you get a more consistent offensive effort, specifically from the run game.
Okay, yeah. And that's kind of, I'm hoping that they can start to build something there, because, look, if Zeke can give you 4 yards a carry, you'll take 4 yards a carry from Zeke. I'm not necessarily needing explosive plays from him. I feel like I can get that out of the offense somewhere. But I do want production that keeps them honest, because listen, the Saints' secondary is aggressive on the run. Their safeties will come down. Their cornerbacks will crash down too. If you can take advantage of that with play action, that's going to give Brandon Cooks opportunities downfield.
So you just brought up something I'm really intrigued by, and we're going to talk with Saints beat reporter Ross Jackson in just a few minutes. But I want to know more about Marshon Lattimore, because he ended up leaving the game, but a lot of folks are like, hey, the game was out of hand, and it was just like a precautionary thing. But then you've seen them bring him along slowly this week. So I just want to see, like, hey, is he back and at what percent he's back? And then Kool-Aid obviously bounced in there in his stead. So I am curious to know a little bit more about how those two players are going to stack up going into this weekend. And then another thing to watch, it's just one game, right? Like, that's all we have to judge it off of right now. But holy moly, did the Saints change their philosophy on using motion and play action.
Okay.
So you remember, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about how much teams use pre-snap motion and everything. The Saints were really low on that list, and all of a sudden, boom, they spike near the top of the NFL. They had the biggest increase year over year, although just one week, in pre-snap motion. And you also saw a lot more play action. So your previous scoutings of this Saints offense might already be out of date if they're going to really upgrade it. Or maybe, again, they were like, that's an opportunity we have against the Panthers that we might not have against the Cowboys.
You know who their offensive coordinator is, Kevin? It's
Blandino.
New this year. So definitely you'll be out of date if you're looking at last year's stuff. You really were going to watch last year's stuff
That makes sense.
What the personnel is, but it's Clint Kubiak. You ever heard that name before, Kevin? Kubiak?
Yeah, Kubiak is a very famous last name.
Yeah, his...
in the sports world, I don't know.
Gary Kubiak is his dad.
Okay.
And if you ever know anything about Gary Kubiak's offenses, the Texans, the Broncos, Arian Foster era, Terrell Davis era, like, he knows how to run the football. This is where the Shanahan group and all those guys, they come from Kubiak lineage. That's one of the trees they learned from in that area. So, yeah, Clint Kubiak has similar ideas, similar concepts that he's trying to develop and implement in with this offense. So he was the offensive passing game coordinator for the Niners last year. I would suspect to see a lot of similar type stuff that he's implemented, or that his family's been able to implement across the NFL.
Can I read you a really fun text and then a less fun text?
Please.
From the 817. LOL, I could see Kevin being like, I'm going to go shake. So up and down he goes, pulls out a cardboard mat and break dances until that person is like, ugh, here, take all the things. Hey, whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes. And this is a different one. I'm just going to read it so people out there, you know and they feel like they have resources. From the 817, guys, I need help. One of my best friends is making threats to hurt himself. I've been staying up with him, talking to him. He's out of town for work. What is the phone therapy people he can talk to? Go to NamiNorthTexas.org. NamiNorthTexas.org. They have people that can talk to you virtually. And then, you know, once you're back in town, they have all kinds of great services across the Metroplex. So many free services. And I just wanted to read that. I know this is for a specific individual, and I'll respond to that person privately. But if anybody is feeling that way, I just talked with somebody again yesterday who messaged us on our Facebook page and was like, hey, you guys were talking about mental health and I need help. And so I just wanted to, you know, say it out there for everybody. NamiNorthTexas.org. And I'll give you my phone number. But the NAMI people are the professionals. Mm-hmm. I think you should talk with them.
I can always encourage that.
But I will talk to you, too.
Yeah.
But just the NAMI North Texas folks are the professionals.
I just saw a story, Kevin, where Jon Bon Jovi helped a lady that was standing on the bridge ready to go. And he talked her off the bridge, man.
Shoot.
Jon Bon Jovi, dude.
That's
can you believe
crazy.
That? It's my life.
No, see, I thought about that, but it felt...
It's now.
I don't think...
You do want to live forever,
I
Kevin.
Do, mm-hmm. but I just don't know. I don't think Bon Jovi's doing a bit, right, when he's trying to get that lady
going
off the bridge.
Down. No, no, there's lots of different options
okay.
there. Yeah, well, I'll find one that's good, though.
Okay, okay. Yeah. We're the KNC Master. I don't know how to transition.
I would
out of that.
Totally be like, "Hey, John Bon Jovi, I'm done. What are we gonna do today?" That's what I would do.
Man,
you know what? I gave a second thought to it. Let's go have some coffee.
Because you would think,
or some Sagamore Spirit Rye whiskey.
That's true. Like you need to spend more. You need to spend your date with that person,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
yeah.
y'all just shared something that
huge
you,
moment.
You'll never ever forget. So, mm-hmm. yeah, if they want to come on down. To Shakerton's. That's great. We would love to have them. I mean, if there's somewhere else you need to go as well, I understand. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with New Orleans Saints beat reporter Ross Jackson right here on your home of the Cowboys and the Rangers, 105 Through the Fan.
I mean, as much as Kamara's carried it down here, they give it to him and he stands up into the end zone for a Saints touchdown.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through the Fan. We're live at Shakerton's in Arlington. I know my map app said it wrong and said Shakerton's may not be open. It's Shakerton's and they are open. So come on out in Arlington off of Collins Street if you want to come see the show. And right now on the D&M Hotline, we bring to you Saints beat reporter Ross Jackson. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Hey, guys, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on. Hope y'all are holding up well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry if I asked that so slowly, but I know clearly storms have been an issue. Is it a, you know, is it going to be a hurricane? Is it going to be a tropical storm? Either way, it's going
right.
to be really rough. How has that impacted your life? And then I guess perhaps the Saints preparation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, personally for me, nothing big here. I'm all good. Everything's been fine in terms of the area that I was in. With the way that the storm kind of dispersed, it was a little bit lighter. Now, over where the Saints training facility is out in Metairie, they kind of got, you know, pummeled a bit. They got overwhelmed by some of the water, you know, flooding and stuff like that. But as far as I understand it, when it comes to the Saints facility and everything, things are all good. So what they kind of did was that they moved their practice up yesterday to make sure that all the players are able to get home to their families and kind of be there and hunker down during the storm. And then today they've moved things a little bit later so they can get some of those extended meeting times that they would have missed yesterday in today. But otherwise, practice time, participation, all these other things were pretty much the same, just kind of moved around a little bit in terms of scheduling.
One of the things that I saw you talking about and the Saints talking about this week is kind of following the edict of it's just one game. I know it was a dominating victory, but do you get the sense that that message has sunk in or like how the team is prepared to follow up with, hey, I know we dominated, but it's one game. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I think that's very much going to be kind of their mentality throughout this season. I mean, they were kind of talking about that even going into that Carolina Panthers game, where like no matter what happens in this matchup, it's 1-0 or it's 0-1, it's one game and then we move on to the next. And so they're kind of like been fixing that as their mentality, even through training camp when we spoke to them and spoke to players and coaches, and they kind of had that same type of mentality. So I think that's just the way that they're going to approach this season, is kind of really kind of try to play the mentality of the game-by-game situation, which is kind of the mentality of the underdog, right? Like, the mentality
yeah.
of the underdog is kind of that way. Like, this goes how it goes, and then we correct and move forward, or however it is that you want to think about it. And so I think the New Orleans Saints are kind of looking at it in that same perspective.
Were the Panthers that bad?
It's a great
yes.
question, because I do think that there's some truth to that. I do think that, like, yes, the Carolina Panthers are absolutely abysmal. Like, I do think that that is the case. But I think that that's a situation that they are okay with right now, because they've kind of – I give the Panthers a lot of credit for just kind of embracing where they are in the NFL life cycle. We watch so many teams try to ignore the fact that they're in that rebuild area and try to compete and try to stay up and all these other things. And Carolina just kind of said, you know what? Got a young quarterback, going to focus on that. And really this whole season for them is about the development of Bryce Young more than it is about anything else. And so I applaud them for having that mentality. And so I think that that does make it a little bit challenging when you look at the New Orleans Saints opening performance of a 47-10 victory, to kind of go, how much of that was that the Saints are good now, and how much of that is that the Carolina Panthers are just a bad football team. So I think you kind of have to look at the things that are independent of the opponent. What was their play calling like? Did they include their easy buttons in their offense? All these other things. And I think they checked a lot of those boxes that could still bring some cautious optimism for fans as they get ready for a much more challenging opponent, the Dallas Cowboys, this weekend.
That's a great line to throw in there, because one of those other things to look at is Clint Kubiak and what he's brought to this offense, and how much did it change with, you know, the personnel that they do have? How much did that what they want to accomplish change offensively?
Yeah, pretty impressive in terms of what they were able to do over on the offensive side. So again, leaving alone the opponent of the Carolina Panthers, kind of just looking at their play calling tendencies, they went from number 27 in the NFL last year in tight end target distribution to the top of the NFL in week one here in 2024. They went from using just over 33% of their snaps, including motion in just over 33% of their snaps, my apologies, in last year's season, to over 60% in that opening game. So they took a big step forward in terms of the use of motion. And then Derek Carr's play action dropback percentage, yes, went from just over 14% to 40% here. So to kind of bundle that all together, because I know numbers aren't always great for, you know, great in these audio formats and things like that, but like, that's a big jump, and three of their kind of biggest depleted areas from last season in terms of getting their offense in rhythm and finding ways to be able to kind of challenge a defense in new ways. So Clint Kubiak's brought a lot of those easy buttons, motion, play action, RPO, screens, things like that, back to this New Orleans Saints offense.
How vital is it not only that the changes got made, but at least in week one, they were really effective? I believe it was an article I was reading from you that said Carr was 7-9 out of these play action attempts for a touchdown, had a 130 passer rating. So how mm-hmm. encouraging is that not only did they up it, they were effective at it?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing to where what you're trying to look for in this offense, particularly on the offensive side here, is that in terms of improvement, you're looking for, you know, the play calling improvements, which we just notated. You're looking for the execution improvements, which I think that's a really good example of that. Derek Carr, not only that, but also being perfect down the middle in this game, which was an area of the field that they didn't attack very much in the passing game last year. We also saw him throw only one incomplete pass and pick up a bulk of his yards, as well as two touchdowns, by targeting the intermediate area of the field, another spot where they didn't successfully target last year. So we saw some shifts in his game that kind of replicate what we saw from his most successful side towards the end of the season, where he had a really, really good close to the year. And so we saw some of those same elements kind of be pervasive through that six-game stretch and then now this opening game. And then the last thing that you're always looking for in this is the individual effort and how that leads to impact. And I think we saw that from the offensive line. We saw that from Alvin Kamara. We saw it from Taysom Hill. And so there's a lot of those little elements of kind of checking all three boxes over the course of that opening Carolina Panthers game.
You just mentioned one of the names that inquiring fantasy minds want to know. What exactly is going on with Taysom Hill?
The answer is yes. everything is going on with Taysom Hill, right? He wears the number 7, but he also played 7 different positions the course of that game against the Carolina Panthers. He played at fullback, running back, tight end, wide receiver, or excuse me, not wide receiver, but tight end, and then also played in all four, he's a four-core player, so he'll be involved in every part of the return abilities as well as coverage units, with the exception of a punt return. He's not a returner in that situation. He's trying to block a punt in that situation. So he's on the field constantly. I think that he's going to be utilized quite a bit in this game. I imagine he's going to be a big focus. I mentioned earlier that the Saints were number 1 in the NFL in week 1 in terms of tight end target distribution. I think that's going to probably shift going into this game, because with Dallas's really, really successful and efficient pass rushers, I expect a lot of those tight ends to kind of stay in and help block. And so Taysom Hill becomes a weapon, because he can chip and release, run a route for you. You can line him up, you know, at quarterback, and then, of course, get him involved in the run game and have him run out of the backfield to either help with blocking or, you know, contribute to the run game. So I would expect a lot of different things going on when it comes to Taysom Hill and the ways that he will be utilized, because whether it's throwing, catching, or running, I think he's a shoe-in to be involved at some point in all three of those things in a game.
One of the Cowboys' strengths is Micah Parsons. I mean, the ability to get at the quarterback and take advantage of that opportunity on the edge. One of my favorite players to watch during the our draft coverage was your left tackle, Talisi Fuaga. How has he progressed? How has he done? How do you feel after that first game?
He had a fantastic opening game, really, really good, especially for all intents and purposes, he's still a rookie starting left tackle, right? Like, not an easy position to be in. And I thought that he looked really strong in this game. Now, Carolina's got one of the weaker pass rusher groups in the NFL, if not the weakest. So if nothing else, it's a big confidence building game for him, right? Like, he was able to go out there and kind of establish his play demeanor and all those things that you like seeing on his college tape at Oregon State. I think you saw a lot of that in this game as well. But he still had to match up with guys that are talented, right? Jadeveon Clowney, he got a really great rep that he just kind of climbs the entire into the second level with Derrick Brown in tow, the starting defensive tackle whose season is unfortunately over now, but is a very talented player. And so I think that he built a lot of confidence this week. I think that this week up against Dallas, I would expect him to get some help, but it's going to be a real kind of test of where he truly is, kind of a litmus test. The tough thing here is that you know Micah Parsons is going to get his. He is, in my opinion, the best defensive player in the game of football, was last year, probably could have been the year before too. And for me, I think that, you know, the biggest thing for him or for Taliese is to make sure that, like, when Micah Parsons does make his play, that you erase him and move on. You know, you have to have that short memory, and then it's on the Saints to kind of minimize the effect of that and when Parsons does get those plays.
Kind of like that little dig in there at the AP voters for not voting him for Defensive Player of the Year. I dig that. We're talking with Ross Jackson. Yeah, Ross Jackson right here, Locked On Saints, beat writer for Louisiana Sports, and Saints analyst for WWL TV. Another thing that I know it might have been precautionary, how is Marshawn Lattimore looking? And then I'm curious, when he was out, what did you think about the performance of Kool-Aid?
Yeah, so to update on his status so far, he has told us several times now that he's fine. However, he didn't participate in practice on Wednesday. Now, I will say that the Saints have a very common, or I guess what we see from them oftentimes, is that they're very precautious when it comes to injuries nowadays. And so especially with a hamstring injury, which is always typically, like, if it's not fully healed, it's a matter of when, not if, it gets worse. And so I think some of that was just them kind of being careful. So maybe a big one to watch, of course, going into this week, and we'll see how it goes. Now, the advantage to a guy like Marshawn is that he has been in this system with Dennis Allen from the moment that he was drafted back in 2017. And so he could conceivably not practice Wednesday, Thursday, be limited on Friday, and then still play on Sunday. Like, he's one of those, you know, those core guys. And so because of that, it's worth watching the injury report, but I do think that there will be a little bit of gamesmanship here by New Orleans. He'll be questionable on Friday, and then it's going to be a big old game time decision on Sunday or something like that. So we'll see which way it goes, but that's kind of what I would watch there. I did think that rookie second round pick out of Alabama, Kool-Aid McKinstry, fared well. He did have one, you know, play on a scramble where he came off of this coverage that he didn't necessarily need to. Dennis Allen highlighted that in one of his recent media availabilities. But outside of that, he played 27 snaps on defense, I believe it was, and played particularly well. I mean, you know, again, not the most challenging situation over there for Carolina, with Carolina, and then eventually, you know, a very in-game situation for them. But it was a good opportunity for him to get out there, learn a little bit, go back, see the tape this week, and then see what he's able to do moving forward. But you'd love to have Marshawn Lattimore out there against these talented wideouts in Dallas.
Man, outstanding stuff, Ross. We really, really appreciate it, and glad to hear that you're staying safe, and hopefully all the folks in New Orleans are as well.
Thank you, buddy. Really appreciate that. Thanks again for having me on. Really appreciate it.
There you go. Ross Jackson right here on 105.3 The Fan. He was a wealth of information.
Does that two Jacksons? Did we have Zach Jackson last time, or was it Zach
something? It was
something. Jackson. So we've had two Jacksons on now. Both of them have delivered awesomely, dude.
Okay.
I'm proud of this. Good job, Alex.
So what Jackson will be next?
Action. All right.
Michael.
Oh, well, I'm afraid I have some terrible news to tell you off air, Alex.
I bet there's a Mike Jackson out there.
That's a good point. That is a good point. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're live at Shakerton's in Arlington, courtesy of Corey Shirt. Now, I guess if you're not watching the YouTube or the Twitch, you probably need more description for that. But we hope you come out and see us for the program. Coming up next, it is Baseball Buckets with Corey Majors.
Let's talk about Kamar Rocker's first game, his debut with our friend Jared Sandler next on The Fan. Thank you very much, Chuck Morgan. Really appreciate that. And Jared, thank you very much for hopping on with us today. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm great. You know, it's so nice of Chuck to be in his booth every time you do this segment and announce.
He's a pro.
Yeah, I usually text him. I text him and I say, hey, Mike's out this day, so you know what you got to do. And he says, yes, sir, I'm there for you.
Do you think he just lives in that booth? I mean, it's pretty sizable. So
I'm
maybe
not going to lie, that thought
there.
Has crossed my mind. That thought has crossed my
you
mind.
You could. I mean, that thing's decorated like it's a bit like it's his man cave. That thing's awesome.
Some built-in pantries.
I don't know where Chuck lives, but like if he hypothetically lived like 45 minutes away, day game after a night game, I mean, why not just sleep there?
Sounds like a brilliant
Jared,
idea.
Do you kind of wish you lived at the ballpark?
You know what I wish? Anytime I'm in a ballpark and I'm like one of the last ones there, which is often the case, I think all the time about how awesome it would be to have like all my friends and play like a massive game of like tag or paintball or hide and seek or like something sweet. Where like the ballpark just becomes your playground, and I don't know. I think that would be the coolest thing. Like if I was like 14, 15 years old, basically using any sports venue as like your PE gym or like your sleepover gym where you can do like cool stuff like that. Yeah, I think about that like way too often.
That would be awesome. That is my new, Jared, I know it's not going to happen for this piece-a-thon, and you're probably going to want to use it for Swinging for a Cause. That's my new goal, is we get with the owners, ask if they'll give us the stadium for a night, and we can have a massive
game of
tag game.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that for your event out there. I know it's going to be at the stadium again.
That, you know what? Yeah, it will be at the stadium. Thanks for bringing that up. Tickets available. Go to 105thefan.com/sandlot. It's a pretty unique experience. You get to hang out on the field. You can do things as simple as playing catch on the field or wiffle ball home run derby. We've got events for all different sports and activities, raising money for kids with physical and intellectual disabilities. So thank you for making note of that. But yeah, it's like the movie Tag with John Hamm and that movie is such a brilliant. Like that's what like basketball. Basketball is a movie where I'm like, how has that not become a sport? Basketball is the best sport. Tag, like that is. I would like to believe there are people out there, adults, who still like channel that inner kid in them, and they still play tag in some sort of adult way.
If you had to guess right now, what time do you think you will call in to the G-Bag Nation tomorrow to argue about how good Kamar Rocker's
start
was?
Hey, Jared, you don't have to answer that question. I do want to get to a couple texts real quick, though.
It's a forward promote. What's the problem?
Somebody said, grow up, Jared, but that would really awesome. That would be cool, though. And then somebody said the Sandler Slumber Party. That sounds like a great idea.
I
think we're doing that. So that is I did like that Kevin kind of did lead you in the direction that I wanted to go, though, and that is the excitement tonight for Kamar Rocker. And like, I know we got a football game going on that we can keep an eye on. You can hear it on the Odyssey app. And then on top of that, Rocker's pitching for the first time. And we discussed yesterday Leiter getting multiple opportunities in a row and kind of being able to calm down with it. What do you expect out of the personality of Kamar Rocker?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be like a cliche thing to say about him, but he kind of has a football disposition about him when he's on the mound. He kind of, you know, pitches with a swagger and then a presence like a football player, which makes sense because he was raised by his mom, Lou, but then his father, Tracy, who was a big-time football player and now a coach with the Tennessee Titans. He's bounced around the NFL and college, but he's a big physical presence on the mound, right? That's so opposite of Jack Leiter. Jack Leiter's not that big. He throws 98, but You know, Kamar Rocker is a big presence. You know, he's someone who I think has had a professional pedigree and way about him for a while. I think, you know, the weird thing at Vanderbilt, it was a surprise that he went to Vandy, but for 3 years, it was kind of like a ticking clock until he was going to be the number one overall pick. And it just seemed like, you know, that's a tough pedestal to hold, and people just started trying to pick him apart. But, I mean, he's been working towards this probably for quite some time, obviously. Fastball, slider, his two best pitches, throws a changeup. He's been working on a curve. He also has a cutter. But, you know, I think a lot of what he did coming up in AA and AAA this year was fastball, slider with the occasional change. And so the key is going to be, how often do major league hitters chase the slider? How often does he have to go to that changeup? And then when he gets third time through, which I don't know if he'll get there tonight, but that's, you know, how is that repertoire going to work when he has to face hitters for a third time?
Yeah, man, that's the idea on hearing Bochy talk about it the other day. He said, you know, he didn't just kind of ask for this. He knocked the door down.
Yeah,
right. On his way, and we have, you know, like, this is one of those he earned every second of his opportunity here.
Did you think he also made it sound like, I know he didn't explicitly say this, but just the way he was describing it, he made it sound like Rocker's in for the 2025 rotation, regardless of how this little tryout goes.
Well, so here's what I'd say. I think Kamar Rocker, without question, is going to be a big presence in the rotation next year. But they've got some tough decisions to make with him. Typically, and this is where you enter the gray area of pitcher health, typically when a guy is coming off of Tommy John surgery, which is what year, that first full year, you're not going to, if he is a young guy, so not like a Jacob DeGrom, but if he's a young guy, you're typically not going to extend his innings more than maybe 25% of what it was the previous year. So now, that's not a hard and fast number. That's just a general, you know, every team's got a different philosophy. But what I would feel pretty confident in saying is that the Rangers don't have plans.
Oh, man.
Is that us?
That was like the most dramatic part.
Did he just die?
The Rangers don't have a plan.
I mean, his phone could have died just now. That could be a thing that just happened. So that's kind of...
From the 817, I heard opening day starter next year. No, we are not confirming that. I'm not confirming that about Rocker.
But do you want to help spread the rumor?
No.
Because, like, if that's an idea, I'm totally okay with that. If he pitches that well and deserves that opportunity... It could be between him and DeGrom for that opening day starter.
I mean, that's fine. I do not want to start that rumor. Alec, do you still hear us loud and clear?
Oh, that Jared's back.
Okay, yay.
I'm here. Where did it cut off?
You said it was like at the dramatic point when you're like, but that's not to say, and then it cut off, and I like really didn't know what you were going to say next.
So the Rangers could have him in the rotation from start to finish, but just really monitor his innings. That would probably lead to a lot of people getting frustrated when he's through five scoreless, but they pull him even though he only has 70 pitches, right? It could be, hey, we're going to start you in the minors, where if you go three innings for a couple starts and then four for a couple starts and five for a couple starts, that's not going to, you know, be a detriment, and they kind of slow his innings early. Or he could be with the big league club at the beginning, normal leash, and then they kind of shut him down in the middle. You know, maybe give him 2-3 weeks off, kind of deload, and then get him going again. Or it could be one of those things where, and this is always the awkward one, hey, no leash, no governor, but probably by mid to late August, we're going to shut you down. And it doesn't matter whether we're in first place, last place, World Series favorite, World Series contender, whatever. So, I here's the thing too, guys. Like, I say all this, and I can't tell you that Kamar Rocker throwing 180 innings next year would be detrimental for him physically. I just don't know. And the reality is, no one knows. But there is enough of a track record here, like Ronaldo Lopez with the Braves, not necessarily coming right off Tommy John, but he's been a reliever. They make him a starter this year. He was awesome. But you know what? He's out for the rest of the year and might have to have surgery as of a couple days ago because of a shoulder issue, right? And it's tough not to connect dots and say, well, the major growth in innings didn't contribute.
Kevin.
All right. Excellent. I this time I felt like I got the point of where he was going. Unlike the cliffhanger for the last one. So I understood. Great information, as always, from Jared Sandler.
Screw you, Jared. Goodbye.
I think Dawson snuck up into the studio and hung up on him a couple different times there. I think that's what happened, Kevin.
All right, serious question. Is it more likely or not likely that he will talk to the G-Vag Nation unplanned tomorrow?
More likely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I was looking for.
There you go.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're shifting the schedule up just a little bit with the Mike McCarthy presser, supposing to start at 11:10. We'll see how that goes. Coming up next, though, live from Shakerton's in Arlington, it's time for Gridiron Gravy. What to watch for, and can you watch Bills Dolphins? Next on The Fan.